the future of recycling both here in Maine and across the nation. In 1989, Maine set a goal that half of the state's waste would be recycled or composted by the year 2009. Despite education and community efforts to boost recycling, that goal was not met. But it has not been given up on. Now, the Maine DEP is aiming to reach a 50% diversion rate, that's the rate of recycling or composting trash, by 2021. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, the future of recycling. The decades-long mantra of reduce, reuse, recycle is taking on new meaning these days. EcoMaine last month launched a new food waste recovery program. New composting companies are taking off, and many towns and cities are cracking down on the use of plastic bags and styrofoam containers. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Most of us have the basics of recycling down. We put our bins of paper and plastics out each week, and we turn in our bottles and cans. But so much more is happening on the recycling front. We'll talk about how new technologies and approaches are helping us make better use of our waste. And joining us in our studio, Kevin Roach, he is CEO of EcoMaine. Shelby Wright is Director of Communications and Development for Maine Resource Recovery Association. And Tyler Frank founded Garbage to Garden. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you want to know about what happens to your trash? Are you interested in composting, interested in finding new ways to use what you dispose of? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Shelby, the Maine Resource Recovery Association is an umbrella organization for all of the different organizations throughout the state, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Maine Resource Recovery Association has been around for about 30 years. Its primary function has been to assist municipalities to market their materials after recycling.
Huh.
So we've been moving cardboard and plastic and paper back and forth throughout the state for about 30 years. We have about 162 current members that represent industry, individuals, and municipalities and towns throughout the state of Maine.
Okay. Kevin, during the last decade, it seems as though there's been more awareness of recycling. Do you think we're doing better as a society overall of reducing, I know the term is called diverting that trash from the landfill into recycling or composting?
You know, I think we've come a long way. Diversion rates, you know, are in the 30s now. And 30 years ago, you know, if you asked me that same question, you know, it would be a stretch to get to, you know, 35%. And so are we at 50%? No. Is there room for improvement? There's enormous opportunity. But I think for the most part, consumers, businesses, they want to do the right thing. They just have to make sure, we just have to make sure that it's convenient for them and that they have the opportunity to do it.
So is 50%, I know that's the goal that was set by the DEP in 1989. The goal was 2009. It was not met. Now it's 2021. Is that a realistic goal? Can we really have 50% of our waste go into a meaningful, useful stream?
I think we can. And, you know, when we set 50%, there's a lot of variables that have happened in the industry. For example, lightweighting of packaging. We didn't really foresee that was going to have a huge impact on the waste stream. Water bottles and some of the other materials that are discarded are lighter than they ever were. And so that's a variable that we have to take into consideration that has reduced our ability to achieve that 50%. But certainly, if you look at the waste stream now, 20% of it still is recyclable materials. So there's huge opportunities there, and then along with food waste recovery as well.
Okay, and I know you have exciting news on the food waste recovery front, but I want to bring Tyler into the conversation. Tyler, talk about food waste recovery. That's what you do. Tell me your story, how you founded Garbage to Garden.
Yeah, thanks. So yeah, very quickly, I moved from the country to Portland about 4 years ago. And I lived in a little apartment with no space to compost. And one of my roommates said, if we could just put it at the curb like recycling, then it'd be easy and we could compost.
Which they do in some cities. I've been to San Francisco recently in their compost bins on the curbside.
Yeah, absolutely. Up in Canada as well. But you know, I actually wasn't too familiar with those programs when I started Garbage to Garden. I just envisioned if we could, you know, give everyone a bucket that was easy to open and close, make it convenient by picking up on existing trash schedules, you know, wash the bucket, keep it clean, make it rewarding, and close the loop by giving the finished organic compost back, that people might sign on to that. And I, you know, went in with a pretty low price, thinking would get a lot of people and make it a pretty much a municipal scale program. And we really have, not like we have everyone in our service area, but we've got, you know, 6,000 households composting curbside, a number of businesses now as well. But, you know, starting it was a challenge because I didn't have any resources. I didn't have savings. I, you know, lived in a tent the following summer to buy equipment. And, you know, a lot of hard work on a lot of people's parts has made it happen, and not least of which the commitment of the Portland community to do the right thing with their waste.
Wow. And in what time frame have you done this?
It's been just over 4 years. It was summer of 2012 that we started out with 12 buckets in my old pickup truck, and it's grown a lot since then.
That's terrific. Kevin, tell me about EcoMaine's big announcement just recently.
Just recently, we were able to launch our food waste recovery program, and so we are now accepting food waste in a plastic bag. We're utilizing the plastic bag because we feel that the consumer, we went all over the country and to look at different types of programs. And one of the things we found was that we have to satisfy the ick factor, the factor that comes with food waste, the ick, the fruit flies, the odors, the smells. And so we felt like one of the best practices that we saw out there was the utilization of a clear plastic bag to contain the food waste. So if you go to your grocery store and you put your head of broccoli in a clear, usually the first thing you do is put it in a clear bag because you want to contain that food waste when you bring it home. You can use that same clear bag to contain your food waste as a liner and you give that plastic bag a second life. And then we're going to debag that material from the food waste. We're going to combust the plastic bag at our waste energy facility, and the food waste is going to go to a digester.
Does that plastic bag full of your food scraps go in with your regular trash, or do you put that in a separate bag?
Right now, the program, the way it's set up is going to be a separate. It's going to be a separate collection, and we're just starting this off. So there's not a community that has this available to them yet. But you know, there's a lot of interest, and I think that more and more interest will come on board. Right now, the focus is on the big generators of food waste: the grocery stores, the commercials, the institutional food waste processors. So that's where our focus is right now. Kind of like you know, at the mall, it's the anchor stores that kind of hold the thing together, and then everybody follows suit. And that's our model. That's the way we started with recycling 20 years ago, and we are using that same path for starting food waste composting.
Shelby, in your view, is food waste recovery sort of a really big deal in reaching this 50% goal of reducing diversion or increasing diversion?
Absolutely. I think on the scale of things that can be removed and easily diverted from the waste stream, food scraps are definitely the lowest hanging fruit. They make up approximately 40% of the waste stream.
40%.
And so if you think of all of that food, you know, going to waste from not being eaten or going bad in your refrigerator, then ending up in the waste stream and then in the landfill or the incinerators, and you can just think of the impact it would make to just remove that waste.
And we just did a program last week on reducing food waste, mm-hmm. and that's part of the reduce, reuse, recycle. And we're talking about that food waste that can't not, once the reduction didn't take place and it can't be reused, mm-hmm. where to put it. I read something interesting. I'm going through my papers as I'm trying to figure out where I read this recently, that the average person has something like 4.5 pounds of waste a day. Is that right?
Well, thankfully, I'm not in my household, but we're very conscious about that. But I don't know that. I've never read that fact,
okay.
But it wouldn't surprise me.
Kevin, you're nodding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge figure. And it does depend on the size of the household and how well they manage their waste. Mm-hmm. If you're not recycling and you're not recovering your food waste, then you're going to have a lot of waste.
Wow. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our emails, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. I want to have some discussion about how the whole recycling market works and where we are in it. I'm guessing, Kevin Roach, and I've talked to you over the years about this, that because the price of gas is low, that means the price of petroleum is low, which means a lot of what you try to sell is not fetching a pretty good price right now. Am I right?
Particularly plastics. I mean, it's a petroleum-based material, and so it's going to follow that market. So the scrap plastic market follows the price at the pump. And so that's certainly the case.
So why should someone recycle plastics now if you're not getting a decent price for it?
Well, you know, 20, 25 years ago when we started these recycling programs, we didn't start them because the scrap was worth so much money. We started these programs because it was diverting the materials away from the landfill. Storing waste in a landfill is a forever proposition. It'll be there forever. And so the idea here was to get it out of the landfill and in into a better use. And so we got kind of spoiled over the years because the price of these commodities really flourished for a long periods of time. But they have been cyclical. If you look at history, you know, they've been up, been down. Right now, the markets were down. Actually, over the last 6 to 8 weeks, they've been up. But there's been a lot of stories out there that have really hit recycling hard. And I think it's unfair because recycling is doing its job. It's removing waste that would ordinarily end up in the landfill.
All right. Shelby, are there places in Maine that are doing better than others? And if there are, do you have ideas about why?
Well, I think the key to having a very robust community recycling program is a culture that buys into it. You know, around Maine, there are certainly different challenges to recycling, whether it's distance, remoteness, locations, and access to, you know, programs, much like Tyler's. So we can encourage a lot of different things. We can encourage, you know, more backyard composting, more community involvement, a lot more education and outreach. I think that, you know, when you look at the state as a whole, like, can we do better? Absolutely. How can we do better? I think it's going to take a lot of collaboration, a lot of regionalism, and a lot of cross-pollination of ideas and education and outreach in which to do that. So are Portland's recycling rates better than limestones? Possibly. But why is that? And we have to identify those challenges. We also have to identify what is in the waste stream. Each municipality is individually responsible for the way that it deals with its recycling and solid waste. And sometimes those two things are completely separate things. Recycling can go to one place, solid waste can go to another. And so municipalities have to take the responsibility and the communities have to take the responsibility of knowing what's in the bin, knowing how to deal with those wastes, and then having the conversations to not only increase recycling rates, but also help reduce the impact on their municipal budgets by lightening the load of the tonnage that they dispose of every week or day or month.
Tyler, you started your program in Portland, but you have incorporated some other cities and towns as well now, right?
Yeah, that's right. We go, you know, Portland, South Portland, Cape Elizabeth, Westbrook, Falmouth, Cumberland, Yarmouth, Brunswick. We also have drop-off stations in some other communities because, you know, to your question about, you know, regional challenges, some communities just aren't dense enough to justify a curbside program and they don't have them. And so, you know, we've piloted drop-off locations pretty successfully. People are sort of self-managing at that point. We're not there to watch if they don't contaminate the bin or if they, you know, some other way don't use the program correctly. But all signs so far are very positive. I think these are going to work well. And you see other drop-off programs out in Western Maine that are coming online.
So how does garbage to garden work for the consumer? Do you provide them with a special bucket and tell them what can go in and what can't go in it and what day you're going to pick it up?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, you know, we'll tailor our program to, you know, whether the customer is a household or a municipality. But as we've done so far, our individual subscribers get a 6-gallon bucket or two if they need the space. Most households only need one. And we swap them out weekly on their existing trash day. So you don't have to think of a different day to put it out. And then we swap it out for a cleaned bucket. So that way it's, you know, we overcome the ick factor that Kevin's talking about. And then we'll deliver the finished compost in a bag by request. So you can get a bag of compost every week. But, you know, it only goes to the people who request it because they're going to use it. But that's our way of making it, you know, clean and convenient and rewarding.
Well, if you're returning compost to city dwellers, do they have a use for it or can they give it to someone else?
Well, you definitely see a lot higher return rate of compost in Cumberland, say, than in the peninsula in Portland. But, you know, we make the point to everyone that every scrap that you compost with Garbage to Garden goes to grow something. It, you know, it's if it doesn't go, if you don't have a use for it, you can get it and give it to your mother. It's my mother's birthday today, by the way. I wanted to work in a shout out to her.
So you're going to give her some compost for her birthday?
Well, yeah, I give her a lot of compost. So I like to give her something else for her birthday. But, you know, it goes to a community garden or it goes to a school. So it's all going to do some good.
Shelby, I understand that there's some pretty big hurdles to doing food recovery. And I'm looking through my notes and I can't find the right term. There's a piece of machinery that helps you do it.
Well, depending upon the type of food recovery you're talking about, if you're talking about, you know, packaged food from Hannaford, yes, it's a defilmer. You put the packaged food into the machine and it takes the film off, and that enables you to recover a lot more.
Are there defilmers in Maine?
Yes, I do believe there is one. I think Kevin could probably talk
a
little
Kevin,
bit
Oh, Kevin, do you have a defilmer
that.
At Eco Maine?
We don't, but our contractor who's processing our food waste, they have a depackager in Exeter, Maine.
Oh, wow. And how long have they had that? Is this like sort of brand new technology?
The technology has improved over the years. If you asked me that question 10 years ago, I wasn't impressed with the technology. But this particular machine does an excellent job at separating the plastic from the food. And they've had it in place now for, I think it's getting close. I know it's over a year, but it might be even closer to a year and a half.
Is the fact that in its Exeter's, what is the name of the organization?
It's Exeter Agri-Energy or AgriCycle.
Okay,
Energy.
AgriCycle. And the fact that AgriCycle has procured this machine, was that the tipping point that made EcoMaine go all in and say, okay, we're going to try to do this with all of our member communities?
When we were able to see and they were able to demonstrate for us that they were successful at separating bags from food waste, we found a solution to that ick factor that I was talking about. And so that's what we needed to launch the program. And we kind of wanted to wait to see, to be able to touch, feel, and see. And we were able to do that and have the level of confidence in this organization, in Exeter Agri-Energy, to be able to provide that solution to us.
Okay. And if somebody wants to do this and is listening right now and says, when is this coming to my community, my home? What's your answer?
It'll come when the demand is there. And so I encourage you to contact your elected officials and say you want this service. It won't be provided until the demand is apparent.
Okay, and I want to jump back to you, Tyler. You said that there's similar companies to yours propping up in Western Maine?
Oh, I was saying that there's drop-off locations in Western Maine at transfer stations that serve those communities.
So you guys make a big loop once or twice a week where you're going out to Western Maine to pick up the buckets?
There's actually other companies are picking up in the communities in Western Maine. We have drop-off locations in some of the communities around Portland.
Okay. Interesting conversation. We do have to take a break. We're talking about recycling. We're talking about food recovery and the future of these in Maine. When we come back, your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Apple Acres Farm, offering you-pick apples, farm-to-table shopping, and lunch in Cornish. AppleAcresFarm.com. By Cancer Care Center, Sanford, your county's only radiation center with the newest technology in Maine. CancerCareYorkCounty.org.
Facebook called him a lowly spammer. They never thought he'd become a champion for user rights.
Nobody up until that point had ever had the courage to publicly say to users that they don't control their data.
I'm Audie Cornish, Stephen Vachani, and the lawsuit that may force Facebook to relinquish control over your profile. Next time on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening with Nora Flaherty. NPR One is a free app that pays back the latest newscast and top stories from both NPR and Maine Public Radio. So no worry if you missed Morning Edition or All Things Considered or the Maine news reports. NPR One allows you to skip ahead to the next report if you'd like, for instance. NPR One is our mobile app for Apple, Android, and Windows phones. It combines both NPR and Maine Public News. It's free, and it's available in the Apple Store, the Android Play Store, or the Windows Phone App Store.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the latest approaches to recycling. With me in our studio, Shelby Wright with the Maine Resource Recovery Association, Tyler Frank with Garbage to Garden, and Kevin Roach with Eco Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before I move on, though, I have to mention that there is a small plastic cow with us in our studio. Kevin, why do you have a cow with you?
Well, Shelby brought this down to me because one of the challenges that I had early on, you know, when we were looking at these programs, was co-digesting the food waste with agricultural waste, animal waste, cow poop. And so I wanted a digester right here in Portland. And the folks told me, well, either they got to bring the 25 head of cow down to Portland, or we got to ship the food waste to Exeter. So they went out.
And you brought him one cow, not 25.
It's a start anyway.
It's a start, right? Everything starts with one step, one cow. So, it was kind of congratulations. And just to say that, yes, Portland, there are cows.
Okay. Joining us on the line now, Sarah Lakeman, Sustainable Maine Project Director with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Sarah, what is it that you do in terms of recycling in Maine? Sarah, are you on the line with us? Sarah Lakeman. Sarah Lakeman, are you on the line with us now?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What is it that you do in terms of recycling in Maine?
Oh, great. So you can hear me now?
Yes. Yeah, sorry about that.
Good. All right. So, thanks for having me on the show, and hello to all my friends there. So NRCM is the state's largest environmental advocacy organization, and we primarily work on state policy issues. My particular area of expertise is with sustainable materials management, and I work to support the state's hierarchy of waste reduction, reuse, recycling, and composting, all before, you know, waste to energy or landfilling. And I also work to push for more advanced recycling programs called product stewardship programs for problematic or hard to recycle items like mercury thermostats or paint or batteries. And I also help towns in Maine with passing, single-use bag fees or bans and styrofoam bans, pay-as-you-throw programs. And our big focus right now is on reducing food waste and preventing it from being disposed of at waste energy facilities or landfills.
All right. You were part of the discussion over FiberRight, the waste to energy plant that's been in the news in the Bangor area and in central Maine. Can you touch upon what recycling issues came up during that discussion and are still on the table?
Right. So this FiberRight issue is a very contentious one among waste professionals in Maine. And, you know, we're typically, you know, trying to figure out what the least worst option is for managing and disposing of our waste. You know, there really isn't one right way. So this is kind of complicated, but, you know, I'll simplify as I can. So FiberRight is intended to be a replacement type of waste energy facility in Hamden for the existing PERC waste energy facility in Orrington, except that instead of making energy from, you know, burning trash to make electricity like our existing facilities do, it would rely on organic waste like food waste to make a biogas type of energy. So their model really relies on keeping a steady stream of organic waste like food waste coming into the facility, and much of which it would be mixed with other waste. So this facility would really be the first of its kind in the world and would use a variety of existing technologies in tandem to process a mixed waste stream. So it's really kind of it would be very new for Maine and the U.S. in general.
All right, Sarah, hang on with us right now. We have Craig Stewart-Paul, who's the CEO of FiberRight, on the line as well. And Craig, tell me what kind of scale FiberRight is expected to handle. When do you see yourself opening? How much trash and recycling are you going to handle?
Well, good afternoon. And again, hi to all my friends there. We actually will be open sooner than we thought. The good news here is that the bulldozers are rolling next week. We instructed the contractors. We had our kickoff meeting this week. If you happen to be driving down Colbert Road in the coming weeks, you'll see a lot of work going on. We just ordered our anaerobic digester and paid for that. That's an 800,000-gallon low-solids digester. And we will be processing the waste from 108 communities or more all of whom signed up with us over the spring and summer. And so sometime next year, we fully expect to be commissioning the plant. And we need to be operational in April of 2018. Which is when the contracts run out with PERC.
Let me ask you this, Craig. If the efforts to reduce food waste become more successful, and if awareness has more people composting at their homes and not putting food into the waste stream, does FiberRight still work?
Absolutely. That's a common misnomer and something which is, I think, has been spread around incorrectly, in that we do not rely upon organic waste. That's just one part of the processes that we have. In fact, dry waste, plastics, plastic films, containers, things which are left behind, the other 70%, which is not recycled, and particularly in rural northern Maine, where recycling programs are less efficient, we actually derive much more value from the cardboard and the plastics and the metals that are in the waste stream than the organics. However, when we contracted with MRC, the organization who represents all the communities, we had to show them that we had the capacity to be able to process organic waste. So we built insufficient capacity, but if that waste goes down, it goes down. It does not overly impact the economics of the plant.
All right. Well, Craig Stewart-Paul, thanks so much for calling in. And also, Sarah Lakeman, thank you for all your work on helping promote recycling and help us reduce the amount of materials we use in our lives. I'm going to move on to Anne, who's calling from Belgrade. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. My question is about food waste and municipal waste transfer systems that are already using composting but may not talking to.
Anne, I can barely hear you. Are you on a cell phone?
I am on a cell phone, and I guess.
Shoot. I think we just lost you, Anne. If you can still hear me, please try and call back. We'll move to Becky in Prospect Harbor. Hi, Becky. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for this topic. I'm on the Solid Waste Committee up here in Gouldsboro, and we have a very active recycling program. One thing I wanted to ask was when we identify what's in people's waste, it's a lot of it is takeout packaging. So we've been doing our best to encourage the people, the businesses in our area to use things that people could recycle, not the styrofoam clamshells. And one of the businesses the other day brought it up to me that wondered if there was any kind of recognition we could help with so that it would encourage businesses, sort of like a decal that says buy local. I wonder if there's a statewide decal that we could offer to the businesses that are kind of using green packaging and other things in their business.
Shelby, that's an interesting idea, isn't it?
It is, and it's something that we talk about at Maine Resource Recovery almost every day. One of the challenges, as I said before, is every municipality is responsible for their own decision-making process on recycling solid waste, which makes local control the overwhelming factor in dealing with any kind of consistent or cooperative or just labeling, packaging, information dissemination. So one of the things that we talk about is resources for communities to use that are generic that they can then specialize. And right now we're working on writing a grant to get funding to provide a website which will then include downloadable forms and flyers and things of that nature that would be more consistent for every community to start to do those things like incentivized programs. Unfortunately, since the disbanding of the state planning office in 2010, no statewide recycling organization exists, and Maine Resource Recovery is trying to fill those shoes and has been working towards that for the past couple of years.
Hmm. I have noticed that many corporations have reduced the amount of, it used to be that if you went to a fast food restaurant, the burger was almost always in a styrofoam clamshell, mm-hmm. and now it's almost always wrapped in paper. So there is some of that, a lot of that going on anyway.
Well, you know, and as more industry takes responsibility for the packaging that they're putting out there, we also have to educate the public that this is still recyclable. For example, most of the fast food restaurants, like you said, now put their containers in cardboard packages. However, a lot of consumers still throw them in the trash. There's a lot of belief that if something's soiled, damaged, or broken, that it then can't be recycled. If your tin can is dented, it's more likely to go in the trash can than the recycling bin, as well as ripped paper or food soiled items.
You know what? This is a great question, though, because I just had this and I've asked Kevin this before, but I couldn't remember your answer. I was cleaning out a plastic jar of peanut butter. How well cleaned out does that jar of peanut butter need to be valuable to you, Kevin? I don't want to put it in my dishwasher. Then everything gets all gooey.
That's right. We don't advocate for dishwashing all those recyclable materials. All we ask is that it's empty. We don't want you to use a whole lot of water to clean out your containers. Just make sure you use the knife and get as much of the material out as you possibly can. That's what we feel makes sense. But don't use a whole lot of water trying to get everything squeaky clean, because we can process the material and market it with some level of food residue that's on the container. We don't want the food. We don't want cat food. We don't want peanut butter. We don't want prunes. We don't want any food. We just want it to be empty.
So the prunes can be dumped out into a garden,
exactly,
a garbage to garden bin or your own compost bin. But then you don't worry too much, and that's great for me to hear, because you know, I don't want to give you a product that's not. You're not able to sell, especially if you're getting such low prices anyway.
And that's a change from years ago when you did have to have everything clean. You had to take off the labels and you have to squash the cans. But in order to make it convenient, in order to gain participation in these programs, we had to make it easier.
All right. Well, we have a post from Tracy on Facebook. What are good options for recycling batteries in Maine?
Oh, well, that is actually a very hot topic right now. There is a program called Call to Recycle that will take your rechargeable and your batteries. Different transfer stations around the state participate in it. Hardware stores, you can go online to their website and look up Maine and find out the participating individuals or entities that will take back your batteries.
Okay, say that one more time.
Call to Recycle. .org.
Call to Recycle. We'll put
number
that
two. Yep. Call number two, recycle.org. And you can search for Maine and it'll have a list. The same thing with paint. You know, also the same thing. That's paintcare.org. And then last year in the legislature, they actually tried to pass a battery stewardship program, which did not end up coming to fruition, that would basically mandate battery recycling of all batteries, so that would permanently or attempt to remove those toxins from the waste stream.
All right. Well, joining us now on the line is Travis Wagner. He's a professor of environmental science and policy at the University of Southern Maine. Travis, you've done research on plastic bags and containers. Why are those materials the ones that sort of rise above others in the level of concern?
Well, great question. One of the biggest problems.
Oh, let me stop you right now. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm not.
Oh, interesting. It sounds like you are. Well, keep going. Okay, go ahead.
One of the biggest problems is that the extremely low recycling rate. So it is a problem just kind of managing them at the end of life. The other thing, well, they also cause local environmental problems with litter and stormwater management impairment. But it's also one of those products that we've just come to expect. They have a very short life. We generate them constantly. We have a high generation rate. And again, because of the low recycling, the focus where some municipalities are going is to focus on source reduction. A lot of what we focus on is recycling, but it goes back to one of the comments you made about the 4.5 pounds per person per day. We want to try to lower that as much as possible. And then recycling. So the focus on plastic bags is trying to get that generation rate down.
Yeah, and I know, Kevin, you all have trouble with plastic bags at EcoMaine. I've seen your machines and how they just get tangled up in them.
That's right. The plastic bags have always been a problem for us. And also, too, at the landfills, the plastic bags, when the trash is dumped at a landfill, the plastic bags go airborne, and they litter the trees and they litter the neighborhood. And so they've always been a problem. And so I think these bag bans and these bag fees we've already seen success in reducing the amount of plastic bags that are out there.
And Travis, you're studying this. There are different kinds of ways of regulating the bag fees in styrofoam containers, everything from maybe a 5 cent a bag fee to towns that are banning this altogether. What is the most effective? Has this sort of movement been out there long enough to understand which works best?
Yes. Well, I mean, a ban works the best, but there's a couple problems with that. Obviously, there's the political aspect, but what happened in California was they started banning, and what some places have done is they've banned plastic bags because that's been the focus. And one of the problems is that consumers then have shifted to paper bags. And paper bags actually cost retailers more. And although, you know, there's they are recycled, if you look at the whole life cycle assessment, their carbon footprint is much higher. So what some communities have done, and this is Portland and South Portland have done, is not ban them, but put a tax on them, or a fee, a 5-cent fee. And looking at other examples, this has been a significant impact. So it's reduced substantially the consumption of that, but it still allows for consumer choice. So it's been very effective.
Okay, before I let you go, I want to ask you one question. There's been so much attention given to plastic bags and to styrofoam containers. What's next? What are we going to be hearing about 5 or 10 years?
Great question. Concord, Massachusetts was the first municipality that they have banned the sale of drinking water in plastic containers. So that's something of interest. And what some other communities are also looking at banning is the use of any plastic utensils that are not currently recycled, as well as styrofoam coolers. So those are kind of the areas that, again, they're constantly generated, and there's viable substitutes out there. And, again, it's focusing on source reduction.
Well, Travis Wagner, thanks so much for calling in. Travis Wagner is with the University of Southern Maine's Department of Environmental Science and Policy. I can't believe it. It's time for another break. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at MEMIC.com. Also by Wolfpine Farm, delivering organic meats and veggies to families from Kittery to Lewiston starting November 1st. WolfpineFarm.com. And Casella, dedicated to improving air quality for all Mainers through a commitment to reduce its carbon footprint. Casella, giving resources new life.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. Beginning on October 15th, I'll be stepping up to the mic as the new host of A Prairie Home Companion. Each Saturday night, we'll be featuring incredible live performances by a wide array of some of the best musicians in the world, plus a bit of spoken word, some great comedy, and I'll write a brand new song each week. All this and more right here live each Saturday night.
That's starting this Saturday at 6 o'clock with a rebroadcast this Sunday at noon. And ahead in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour today, a panel discussion on the plight of the growing number of refugees worldwide. That's on World Affairs coming up in 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program, The Future of Recycling in Maine. Joining me, Tyler Frank, founder of Garbage to Garden. Kevin Roach is CEO of Eco Maine, and Shelby Wright is Communications Director for Maine Resource Recovery Association. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Bonnie, who's calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I am a recipient and have been since the onset of Garbage to Garden.
Have I been pronouncing it wrong all along, Tyler?
Yes, but you know, we always call the garbage the garbage. And I want to report to all of your listeners that it is the thing to do. We get a clean canister every Monday. That's our day. It's usually later in the day. We used to be the last person on delivery, but we aren't anymore, I'm glad to say. And what to do with the little bags of soil. I've been an organic gardener since a V for Victory garden in the 40s with my darling father, and I know what organic gardening can do. But I want to say the 4 feet by 4 feet that is all from garbage to garden, soil, I decided that I would do herbs. I'm quite old now, and they are the best greens and herbs I have ever had in all these years. So my hat is off.
ringing endorsement, Tyler.
Yeah, thanks so much, Bonnie.
You're most welcome, and thank you for all the good work that you do.
Yeah, I think Bonnie's, you know, kind of illustrating here how important so many people really value getting something back, and you know, we have all these, you know, great. We have a diverse infrastructure in Maine. You know, we've got the digester in Exeter. We also work with Exeter Agri Energy. But it's also so important to return that organic material to the soil. You know, it's our only way to grow food. And, you know, adding just a half-inch layer of compost to soil can increase the productivity of it by 40%. It increases the water-holding capacity enormously. Compost holds five times its weight in water, so it helps weather droughts and stormwater. And also soil carbon sequestration. You know, it compost in the soil actually sequesters carbon. It's probably our society's best way of reducing greenhouse gases.
Bonnie, thanks so much for your call. A related question from Anne. Can you address what composting services outside Southern Maine area are available? Do we know? Are there others?
There are. There has been an increasing movement among municipalities to set up composting operations at the transfer stations. So residents can come, deposit their food scraps, and then the town actually manages the compost piles. And then when the compost is ready, the residents can then come back and take for free.
If a town is not doing that and wants to, do they contact MRRA?
They can contact us. They can contact the Maine DEP because there are certain, you know, requirements to setting up these areas in the transfer stations. Also, too, communities can really encourage backyard composting. You know, doing it yourself. Now, personally, I don't garden, but my boss does. So I have a table or a countertop bin that I put all of my food scraps in, and once or twice a week, or actually a month now, I take it to him and we swap out, and he takes my food scraps and puts them in his compost bin, and I have a free container, and that way I've lightened my load for my my own household waste.
Okay, so Shelby and Tyler, you together can give me advice on this, right. I'm sure I'm not the only one. I do have a compost bucket on my counter, and I do line it with paper towels, but it still smells. How do I get the smell out?
You need a better composter pail.
Well, they make so many different countertops. Containers. I personally just use a bowl because it's so easy to just rinse it out and, you know, you dump it frequently, like every day and into the bucket. Yeah.
Okay.
The one that I have on my counter, we actually carry the product on our website and we sell them to communities so that they can then sell them to their residents. And I do believe EcoMaine has several of them as well that they gave out to their employees. I've had it on my countertop for a year. I've never smelled it. It's never collected one fruit fly. So there are those out there that you can buy that are just designed better. It's technology and design after
okay.
all.
Okay. So if you've had yours for a while, look again at what's available. We're going to go to Teresa, who's calling from Wyndham. Hi, Teresa. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wondered if you had talked about, there's a couple of things, actually. One is whether or not you've talked
Teresa,
about
you're
the,
very hard to understand. Teresa, we're having a hard time understanding you, but I think that you're talking about adding the motto, refuse, to reduce, reuse, recycle. Is this something that you all have? Refuse.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't, when you say refuse, you know, that they're not going to recycle?
But is she talking about the, you know, the
I don't know, Teresa, if you could try to repeat it again. We're really having a hard time understanding you. Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Hopefully you can call back on a clearer line.
I'm wondering if she's talking about, you know, refusing to buy products that aren't recycled, or if she's talking about the percentage of the population that just does not participate in recycling programs.
And that's pretty small. I mean, we're looking, you know, in our recycling programs, we're looking at participation rates of 85-90%. So the willingness of the public to participate in these programs is huge. I remember 20 years ago, you know, people saying, oh, you can take your little blue boxes and throw them away. But 20 years later, for the most part, we got great participation in our programs.
Okay. My note here says, from the producer, says she means by not using the things
not
you don't need.
Using the things. Okay. So she's so reduction, really,
yeah.
in purchasing those
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
I think, though, Kevin, too, just said something remarkable. You know, your participation rate was, you said, 80%.
85-90%.
Yeah. And I think that as we go across the state, we're not going to see those success ratings in, you know, individual municipalities. I mean, I've traveled the state and visited several communities, small, large, and otherwise. And the more convenient and the more community acceptable and the culture around recycling, the better the participates going rates are going to be. And so when you go outside of a densely populated area where pickup is funded and available and the routes are smaller, you don't see quite as high participation rates. And sometimes people can actually revolt against those mandated programs such as pay as you throw. So it is a very interesting issue to look at on a larger scale on a statewide basis than just focusing on, you know, the traditional, you know, two main model, which I don't want to bring out. But regionally, there are vast differences in participation rates because of availability and convenience and you know, just programs available.
Don't you think part of that, though, is, Kevin, I know a big part of it is what the ethos in your community is and how I saw a Pew Research Center report the perceptions people who live in places where social norms, strongly encourage recycling are more likely to be aware of recycling and to recycle. But also, Kevin, isn't there kind of this general skepticism that you're up against?
You are. And how do you get past that is through education. And so at EcoMaine, we have a very comprehensive education program that is there every year. And so we have a dedicated individual who's in the schools. They're giving tours of our facilities. And we feel if you spend an hour with us, you'll have a good understanding of what it takes to manage solid waste properly. Those people go home. They talk in their circles about good solid waste management policy, and the word begins to spread. So you have to have that acceptance, and education has to be continuous. You can't just tell them once. You know, it's kind of like DWI. You can't just say it once and then think it's the problem's going to be solved. You have to continually go to the classroom and educate every single individual in our community. And although we're not able to get to everybody, we're really making a dent in the population that we're doing our outreach on.
All right. We're going to move on to Gregory, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Gregory. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering.
Boy, we are having some terrible luck with cell phones today. I think there's something in the atmosphere.
Don't throw
Gregory,
them away.
I encourage you to call back if you can. We're going to go to Celeste calling from Portland. Hi, Celeste.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm a planning member of the Maine Environmental Sustainability Network, and I just wanted to put a shout-out. On December 14th, there's going to be an event at Maine Audubon on this topic of recycling and reuse and upcycling and all the different facets of it. And I think one area that hasn't been discussed today, when you were asking what's next, there is so much waste in businesses and in manufacturing in particular, and it's not necessarily that these businesses want to waste, but it takes a lot of time and energy to connect the materials that they have with the people who can use it. I happened to just meet this morning with Luke, who's from Allagash, and they have hop specs, and they have pallets, and they have all these interesting things, bottles that can't be used, that need to get out in the community. And we were meeting to discuss how to sort of create those connections between the people that have the excess and the people that could use these materials, either for creating, you know, small projects on a craft basis or sort of creating another product line for people who actually want to get into more production. So those are my comments.
Okay, Shelby. Well,
Celeste, I think you've touched on something that's very, very important in the world of recycling, and that's a closed-loop economy. We have to support the industry that's going to reuse and repurpose these goods. I think Jennifer had mentioned earlier, you know, I keep recycling and the market's down. Should I still continue to recycle? Well, we also have to be equally aware that we as consumers are responsible for purchasing products made with recycled goods and for reusing and extending the product life of everything that we purchase. Textiles, I think, is an excellent example. Textiles should never go in the waste stream. They should never be thrown away. But also educating people of how to.
So what does one do with an old pair, with some clothing that you don't want to give to Goodwill or Salvation Army because they're stained or... Torn.
I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that if a paper's ripped, it's more likely to go in the trash can than the recycling bin. Or if a tin can is, you know, half off, you can still give it to Goodwill. If it's one shoe, if it's a ripped shirt, there are other markets available than just reselling them. They make rags. They can sell them to industries that break down the fabrics and use them in car parts and insulation and different products. If it's a shoelace, if it's a ripped T-shirt, as long as it's not wet and oily and basically moldy and the ick, you can give it to Goodwill. One shoe, one ripped pair of jeans, anything.
Great to know. Yeah. Celeste, thanks for that call. We're going to try to squeeze in one more call from Stan in Orono. Hi, Stan. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a huge recycler, and I really appreciate your show today. But I do have questions about recycling. I spent a number of years fighting the landfill here in West Old Town, and a lot of the waste, it's a state landfill, and the waste comes from out of state because Maine does not generate enough waste to fuel our trash burning facilities. So I was just curious what you can do, or if you are doing anything related to what happens to that waste from a state-owned landfill, because... And I'm also curious as to when someone has a dumpster full of stuff, it often has food, it has all sorts of things in it. What happens when it rolls up to the landfill? Does it get recycled? Is there food in there that you can use? I'm just curious the connection here, because it's been very frustrating over time to separate my waste back when we used to do that, and then we end up having it just thrown in the landfill.
And you know what? We also have an email from Al about the Old Town landfill and about waste that is from out of state. Is this an issue you all know about?
Absolutely. I think Mainers have been talking about out of state of waste for years. There are facilities, and he's not mistaken, that need more waste to operate and be financially stable. I'm not exactly sure what the answer is to the issue of trucking waste, but we all do it. I mean, Maine trucks waste out of state as well as people trucking it in. It depends on the industry and
This really gets to the root of the problem here. You know, we look at the hierarchy. The hierarchy is the solution to waste diverting.
Repeat the hierarchy.
Reduce, reuse, recycle, compost and digestion, waste to energy, and then landfilling. Landfilling is the very bottom rung, and landfilling is a forever proposition. You see the landfills, they stay there, they'll be there forever. And so we have to reduce, I think he really hit it on the head, we have to reduce what goes into the landfill, and there's no one answer. But if we use every rung the best we can, we will eventually get the diversion that we need to minimize the amount of waste that's stored in our landfills.
And I couldn't agree with him more, and the key to that is more education, and it's more outreach.
All right. Well, thank you all three for being here today. Stan, thank you for your call. Kevin Roach is CEO of Eco Maine. Shelby Wright, Director of Communications and Development for Maine Resource Recovery Association. And Tyler Frank, the founder of Garbage to Garden. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast at 8 o'clock this evening. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Friday on the program, talking about how to prepare your home for the upcoming cold weather. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.